Kelly Carinder is a Seattle area blogger, considered by many to be the very first Tea Party activist. She's a young math teacher with enough body piercings to look more like an Obama supporter than a right-wing activist. But in 2009, she organized one of the first protests against the Democratic stimulus package. Today, she writes a popular blog under the name Liberty Bell. She tells Steve Paulson what those first protests were like.
I mean, they were amazing because there's so many of us across the nation that just never spoke out, never protested, sort of thought that our civic duty revolved around elections rather than in between elections, keeping politicians accountable and trying to influence policy. And so these first few protests were these amazing moments of finding like-minded people, especially if you're in a place like I am, that is very not known for its it's not very known for its conservative leanings.
You're in Seattle.
Right. And Seattle is a very, very liberal town. So finding other people who were like-minded was this great moment, and knowing that you're not alone and that there are other people who do think like you. So that was fantastic. So that's how they used to be. And I would say they've changed a lot because people no longer feel completely out of the loop. I mean, believe me, we still feel like there are so many things that are still wrong, and there's so many politicians on the left and the right that have no regard for the citizenry. But we do feel like we've got a little foot in the door.
Is this all just about economics? Is it about trying to limit government spending?
Yeah. So I affiliate with Tea Party Patriots. There's a few different umbrella groups. The one I affiliate with and work for is Tea Party Patriots. And we have three guiding principles: fiscal responsibility, constitutionally limited government, and free markets. So it very much is an economic movement.
So a lot of the traditional causes that Republicans rally around, especially the social issues like protesting the right to an abortion or gay marriage, those are not important issues to you.
No, because first of all, there's so many other groups that deal with social issues on either side of the issue. They're very well established. They're well funded. So we basically say, look, if you want to get involved in something like abortion, there's tons of groups out there on either side that you can get involved with. There wasn't really a movement, though, or a group that really dealt with these economic issues from our point of view. And those issues are so divisive that, you know, at any given Tea Party meeting, you'll have two people sitting next to each other that, you know, one is very pro-choice and one is very pro-life. And then you'll have two people working together on a Tea Party protest, one who supports gay marriage and one who is vehemently against it. So these issues, these economic issues, unite people in such a phenomenal way. And like I said, there's other groups that deal with those other issues. You can't be everything to everyone. You know, you have to stay focused. And if we really want to affect policy and legislation on these economic issues, then we have to be focused on them.
So let's just play this out for a little bit. You're saying there's way too much government intervention in our lives. Too much money is being spent by the government. Very specifically, what should the government not be spending money on that it is now?
Lots of stuff. Well, let's take a look at some of the various departments. There's, you know, the Department of Agriculture. I remember I was in D.C. about a year ago, and I was in a cab, and I was driving by all of these buildings, building after building after building after building, with rows of cubicles and floors of cubicles. And I just thought, what do all those people do? And one of them was the Department of Agriculture. I think we need to be very judicious in these departments. Department of Education. Like, what does the Department of Education do? I understand that you know, we spend money on education, but it doesn't, you know, I'm not against public education, but what does the Department of Education actually do? So I would first, you know, I would want to take a look at the various departments, commissions, agencies, boards. I know the GAO put out a study. There's over $200 billion of redundancies across these various boards and commissions and agencies and things like that. So that sort of thing I'd like to stop spending money on.
Well, just to take this as an example, presumably, the U.S. Education Department studies educational policy. It studies what makes for effective teaching and ineffective teaching. It works on standardized tests. The mission is to try to have some overall standards for what makes good schooling around the country. You're saying those are not important issues?
Well, I'm saying that those issues could also partially be done at the state level. It's not the federal government's job to run education, and different states need different things. I also think if you look at the size of the Department of Education, if you're really just going to have one little commission that sort of studies what's effective education, what's not, and that sort of thing, I don't think you need an entire department. So maybe we don't get rid of the Department of Education. Maybe we scale it down to the size that it really should be, which would save us a lot of money. And the same thing for the Department of Agriculture, you know, and these various departments that maybe we need a very small agency that studies some things. It just seems, you know, our regulatory agencies are huge because they have to be to keep up with all of these onerous rules and regulations. I would also go very far in saying that one of the projects we're working on right now is the healthcare compact, and that is an effort to completely remove healthcare from the federal government and bring it back to the states. The federal government would still be spending money, but it would basically be completely block granted to the states with no strings attached. A lot of people, when they talk about block grants, there's still strings attached. We're talking about completely free to spend the money on healthcare the way that the state wants to. So Vermont, for instance, could become a single payer state if they wanted to, and a state like Texas could try out free market reforms.
So whenever possible, you would like to bring the control of all kinds of governmental decisions to the state level, take it out of federal hands.
Yeah. And the reason is because, you know, for me, it takes me a little just over an hour to get to my state capital. There and back is less than a tank of gas for me. I can visit my legislators. I can go to the governor's office. You know, I can go to hearings. I can actually testify at a hearing on a piece of legislation. For me in Seattle to get to D.C., say, to testify, which I'm sure I wouldn't even be able to testify, you know, would be a day there, a day back in travel, hundreds of dollars. My U.S. representatives represent way more, you know, hundreds of thousands of more people than my state rep represents. So I have a bigger voice. We all have a much bigger voice, the smaller, the closer the decision making gets to the people. So what we want is to look at every single policy choice and ask the question, who decides? Who should decide that question? If it's education or healthcare, you know, or agriculture or environmental or whatever it is, at what level should that decision be made? And I think in every case, where it's possible, bring it as close to the people as possible. Again, how much easier is it for us to go to a school board meeting and have an effect on the school policy there than it is to go to D.C. and to try to talk to somebody at Department of Education who's probably not going to care who you are at all? And make sure that most of the decisions that are being made by elected people so that we can hold them accountable. Because the bigger government gets, especially at the federal level, the more the decisions are made by bureaucrats that have no accountability to the people at all. So closer to the people and made by folks who are elected rather than appointed or hired.
Now, there have been a lot of political movements over the course of history in America, and a number of them burn out after a few years, maybe after sort of the initial sort of popular outrage has worn off. What's your sense of the future of the Tea Party?
Well, I'm an optimist, first of all. But second, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, I haven't seen that many people at protests lately. I'm worried. What's going on? And I travel the country a lot, and I meet with local groups a lot. You're not seeing a lot of the Tea Party out in the streets because they're working. They're going to these meetings. Some of them are running for local offices. They at least have a monthly group meeting, if not weekly. They're really involved in their local communities. So there obviously is always a chance that people are going to burn out. And I do think that after the election, people put so much into building up to the election that there are some people I know that have said, look, I'm going to take the next few months off, then I'll get back involved maybe, you know, summertime 2011. So there are some people that, you know, you do get burnt out. It's it's basically a volunteer-based movement, so you really run the risk of burnout with volunteers. But I've never met so many people that are so committed to an ideal. And I think it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing to see people turn away from being committed to a person or a politician, because I think on both sides of the aisle, we've had that for way too long. And then we, because we're committed to that person or that politician, we look the other way when they make mistakes and when they do not keep their promises and when they're corrupt. And I think to be committed rather than to a person, to an ideal, you can hold those people accountable. And you have, it's such a bigger view than a person. So I think because of that, we have a very good chance of sustaining for quite a long time.
Do you think the Republican Party has more or less taken on Tea Party values, or do you still see a disjunction between the Republican establishment and the Tea Party movement?
I think there is still a gap between not only the Republican establishment, and it's going to sound weird, but the Democratic establishment too. I mean, obviously the Democrats have a big problem with the Tea Party ideals, but what I'm trying to say is I think there is this establishment of people in both parties who don't want to rock the boat. You know, Nancy Pelosi said something about how she wished elections didn't matter so much, meaning what she was saying was she wished that the two parties could be closer again instead of Republicans being off, you know, being pulled off into this Tea Party path, that if they were just closer together, it would be easier to govern. And, you know, and so I think there's actually a lot of Republicans at the top that think like that as well. It's scary to take a stand for something and have the press come after you. And, you know, you have to know your stuff. You have to be able to defend your beliefs and defend them rationally. And so there's definitely still a gap. A lot of us are starting to feel like, you know, this isn't a Democrat versus Republican fight anymore. We feel like it's the people versus a ruling elite who think that they know better than us. And some of them are Democrats, some of them are Republicans, but they think they know how to run our lives better than we do. And that's what we're fighting against.
Kelly Carinder is a Seattle area blogger considered by many to be the very first Tea Party activist. Steve Paulson spoke with her.